The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
In Destroyer No. 117, Deadly Genes, there are unpredictable consequences when scientists become their own science projects.
Shut up!
There are two of them. Two BCWs. I mean, two. In there.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. White, this probably isn't a good idea.
Of course it is. Have you eaten yet?
What? Yes. Yes, I have.
It's been a few hours for me. I'm hungry again.
We can get something after?
Maybe a little something to tide me over.
And when a feeding frenzy ensues among genetically warped predators, and the hunters become the hunted, can Remo and Chun manage to stay on top of the food chain?
You're fast. You were supposed to lead him over to me. He moved too fast. Yeah. What's so funny?
You, Snagglepuss. You're already dead. And you don't even know it.
He's bluffing.
Twine me, putty tats.
You are in league with the fiend.
I am now. I just met Dr. White. Nice woman. Not much like her taste in beverages. But I think I found a chew toy to cleanse my palate.
When life-saving research has death-dealing results, and helpless lambs seem to become bloodthirsty lions, who do Remo and Chun protect, and who must they kill? Find out what happens when Petri dishes roar in Destroyer No. 117, Deadly Genes. Now available on Graphic Audio.
Coming soon from Graphic Audio.
Hey, woman! Y'all get tired of running, woman?
Baby!
Hey! I like my women when their skin sweats. Maybe I'll just put me a rope round your neck and run you wild, huh? See how you like it and get you to beg me to stop. Maybe offer me something good if I do, huh?
In the world after the atomic war, there are only two choices. Give in or survive.
Get out of here!
Mommy! Michael, get out of there!
I'm going to it. If you try to stop me, I'll kill you.
Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist. Number 6, The Savage Horde. In Graphic Audio.
And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Richard Rowan, Tim Carlin, Lily Beacon, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Graybill, Eric Messner, David Coy, Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Andy Clements, Elliot Dash, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. The Last Gunfighter, number 3, Ghost Valley.
Mm-hmm. Frank Morgan rode into Glenwood Springs in Colorado Territory late in the afternoon, following the trail of Victor Van Bergen and Ned Pine, the outlaw leaders who once held his son Conrad for ransom. Conrad was safe now, after Frank's deadly encounter with the two outlaw gangs. He left a trail of blood and graves in his campaign to free his boy, but the business wasn't finished. Van Bergen and Pine got away. Frank gave up his old ways, meaning the gunfighting trade, years earlier, except in cases of self-defense. But when his boy was taken prisoner by Pine and Van Bergen, he was forced to take to the warpath once again. There were some things even a peace-loving man wouldn't tolerate. He stopped his horse at a weed-choked cemetery near the edge of town when he saw an old man standing near the wrought iron fence around the grave markers. Frank's brown dog, Wolf, growled. The old fella turned around and gave him a look.
Howdy there, mister. Quiet, Wolf.
The man nodded.
You're a stranger to these parts. I reckon you came to see the famous Doc Holliday.
That's not why I'm here. I've heard about Holliday and the OK Corral shootings down in Tombstone. I didn't know he was here in Glenwood Springs.
He came here to die. He's got consumption.
I didn't know.
We've got us a sanitarium in town. Lots of folks used to come here to take them hot mineral baths. Makes them live longer, or so I hear. This place is nearly a ghost town now. Holliday's almost dead, but he gets visitors from time to time who want to see what he looks like. There was this story in the Glenwood Springs Herald about how Doc Holliday used to be a dentist. He had this unusual sign above his office. I seen a tintype of it.
What was so interesting about the sign?
It went something like this, that if satisfaction with my dental work ain't given, your money will be given back.
Well, I'm looking for a couple of men who passed this way. I had some other men with them. One's name is Ned Pine. The other is Victor Van Bergen.
Hell, stranger, damn near everybody in these parts knows Ned Pine. He's a killer, wanted by the law. Are you some kind of lawman?
No.
You're sure packing a lot of iron on that horse. A rifle and a shotgun.
Frank ignored the remark. He also carried a pistol under his coat the man apparently didn't notice.
Have you seen Pine around this town lately?
No, sir, I sure ain't.
Frank was distracted by a figure in the shadows of a tree at the back of the cemetery.
Who's that?
Frank opened his coat for a better reach toward his gun if the need arose.
What are you talking about, mister?
That man. He looks like an Indian.
Frank pointed to the back of the cemetery. Wolf's fur grew rigid on his back.
There ain't nobody there.
Frank saw the figure move away from the back fence of the graveyard.
There he goes now. Fellow with long hair, dressed in a buckskin shirt. He's walking into that stand of pines behind the fence.
There ain't nobody there. You must be plumb seeing things, stranger. There ain't nobody near them trees.
Oh. He's gone now. I don't suppose it matters who he was.
The old man turned away.
There's some who claim they can see the old ones. The ones who came before, they call them. The Anasazi Indians used to live here. They got mud houses up in the mountains, only they all died off a long time ago. Some folks claim they can see them near this burying place every now and then, only they ain't real, like ghosts or something. Most folks in town don't pay no attention to it.
But I did see someone. He was dressed like an Indian. My dog saw him, too.
Look, mister, there ain't nothing wrong with my eyes, and I damn sure didn't see nobody where you was pointing. Maybe you ought to get yourself a pair of spectacles.
I can see well enough.
Frank reined his horse toward Glenwood Springs. He was a shade over 6 feet tall, broad-shouldered and lean-hipped, a very muscular man. He was in his mid-40s and carried the doubtful brand of a gunfighter ever since he was 15 years old and forced into a gunfight with an older man down in Texas. Frank killed the man and several years later got forced into a gunfight with the man's brothers. He killed them all with deadly precision. His reputation as a gunfighter was etched in stone that day, many years and many gunfights ago. The number of dead men Frank left behind him could not equal Smoke Jensen's or a few others' tallies, nor did Frank want it to. Nonetheless, the number was staggeringly high. He didn't count the dead any longer. Frank didn't start a single one of those gunfights, but he finished them. Frank married once, in Denver, a lovely girl named Vivian. Her father, a wealthy man and so-called religious leader, hated Frank. The man framed Frank for a crime, but said he would not pursue it if Frank cleared out without a word to Vivian and never saw her again. Frank, with no choice, pulled out of Denver. Vivian's father arranged to annul the marriage. Frank didn't see or hear from Vivian for years. Vivian remarried and took over her father's many businesses after his death. She became one of the wealthiest women in America. Vivian's second husband died, leaving her to run the businesses and care for her son, Conrad. Conrad arrived within a year of Frank's departure. It was not until years later Frank learned, with a shock, that the young man was his own. Drifting through northern New Mexico, Frank arrived in a mining town to discover Vivian there, overseeing a huge mining operation. A few weeks later, after Frank and Vivian began to pick up the pieces of their lives and get back together, Vivian died at the hands of the Pine and Van Bergen gangs. On her deathbed, she revealed to Conrad the astonishing news that Frank Morgan was his father. To Conrad, it was appalling information. Sometime later, Ned and Vic kidnapped the 18-year-old Conrad. Frank swore to track down both gangs and kill them all, even if it took the rest of his life. Now, as he rode into Glenwood Springs, his mind turned to those who faced his guns in the past and died for their folly. There was a kid in Kansas, a little no-name town right after the war, Billy something or another, about 18 or so. Frank tried to warn the kid off, did his best to walk away from him, but Billy insisted, forcing his hand. Billy died on the dirty floor of the saloon that night. He didn't even clear leather before Frank's bullet tore into his heart.
Frank Morgan, come out and face me!
There was the older man in Arizona, one afternoon years ago, who called Frank out into the street in the mistaken belief Frank killed his brother. Frank repeatedly told the man he never heard of the man's brother, to go away and leave him alone.
Damn your yellow hide, Morgan, you're gonna pay!
Seconds later, the man went for his gun. In a heartbeat, the man was gut-shot, writhing in pain, dying in the street. Frank turned away, mounted up, and rode out of town. Then the father and his sons came to haunt him again. Frank stopped off in a small blot on the map in the panhandle of Texas for supplies. A liquored-up, bad-mouthed, evil-tempered young man in the general store, come trading post, come saloon, braced Frank. Frank tried to ignore him, but the punk kept pushing and pushing. He finally put hands on Frank. Frank didn't like that. He flattened the young man with a big, hard right fist, leaving him addled on the floor.
Look out!
Frank turned, his .45 leaping into his hand. The punk had leveled a cocked .44 at his back. Frank shot him between the eyes, making a bloody mess on the floor behind the young man's head. The young man's father and his other two sons caught up with Frank on the trail about a week later. The father and his sons didn't believe in much conversation. They opened fire on Frank as soon as they got within range. Frank headed for an upthrusting of rocks and brush. An all-day battle ensued. The father and one of his sons were killed, the remaining son badly wounded. Frank patched up the wounded man as best he could, buried the other two, and pulled out. There was nothing else he could do. He thought of the time he found a family butchered by Indians. Frank was prowling through the ruins of the cabin when a small posse from a nearby town rode up. In their blind rage, they thought Frank committed the atrocity. It was an ugly scene, involving a hanging rope. Until Frank filled both hands with Colts and made a believer out of the sheriff and what remained of his posse after the very sudden, explosive, and bloody shootout. Frank carefully avoided the northwestern part of Arizona for several years. He rode into Glenwood Springs now and halted his horse in front of the town's only hotel, Gold Miner's Lodge. He pulled off his hat and ran his fingers through dark brown hair peppered with gray, making a mental note to buy a comb or a brush. Then he popped the cover on his pocket watch and checked the time. It was past 4 o'clock. He glanced at his image in the hotel's front window after he swung down from the saddle.
You're too old for this kind of life.
He tied off his horse, wishing for the comforts of a soft bed and a decent meal after so many days on the trail. But his advancing age would do nothing to turn him away from a rendezvous with Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen. He would find them, make them pay in blood for their cruelty to his wife and estranged son. He needed to find a place to stable his horse after he hired a room for the night. Then he'd get a hot bath, a shave, and a haircut before inquiring about the best beefsteak in town. He made himself a promise as he climbed the steps leading to the hotel. After he found Pine and Van Bergen, he would put his guns away for good.
Hey, mister!
Every muscle in Frank's body tensed. He made ready to claw iron. An old man sat on a bench whittling on a stick.
Are you Frank Morgan, a gunslinger?
My name's Frank Morgan.
Yeah, don't I recognize you? Are you out to kill somebody in this old ghost town? Ain't many of us to choose from.
I'm just looking for a clean room, a hot bath, and something decent to eat.
He went inside before there was a chance for more conversation about his past, a past he wanted to forget. Frank couldn't help recalling his last run-in with Vic Van Bergen and Ned Pine, how close he came to putting both of them in graves. Though he killed many in the gangs, Van Bergen and Pine got away. Frank rescued his son Conrad, but the two killers escaped. Conrad was safe now, though the boy resented him for reasons he'd never fully understand. It was a burden Frank would bear, probably for the rest of his life. Conrad might never understand or care to understand what happened between his mother, Frank, and Vivian's father. Some things were best left alone, even if they caused deep personal pain. Nevertheless, Frank would settle the score with Pine and Van Bergen. He might find them in this most rugged region of the Rockies. He might find them somewhere else. But Pine and Van Bergen would pay with their lives. He strolled up to the hotel desk.
I need a room for the night.
Cash in advance, mister. $2, hard money.
Frank laid two silver dollars on the counter.
Hope you got a bathhouse.
Sure do, stranger.
The clerk gave him a pen to sign the register.
No offense intended, but you smell like you could use one. Just follow that hallway out to the back and Bessie will bring you pails of hot water. The bath and towels cost 10 cents.
Frank tossed a dime down before he signed F. Morgan on a page of the register.
Now, if you can direct me to a good livery stable, I'll make arrangements for my horse.
There ain't but one. It's at the end of Main Street.
Frank nodded and walked outside. Wolf was waiting for him on the porch. Most of the buildings in town were empty, with boards over the windows. Glenwood Springs held the odor of decay.
Let's go, Wolf.
He reined his horse, aiming for the livery. He still wondered about the shadowy figure he'd seen at the cemetery. There was nothing wrong with Frank's eyes. Sitting in the warm, soapy water of the hotel's cast-iron bathtub, he thought back to his arrival at the edge of town. Sipping a bottle of whiskey he'd bought at a saloon next to the hotel, he recalled the figure he saw at the cemetery and the old man who told him how, from time to time, some folks saw ghost-like figures of the old ones, the ones who came before. Frank wasn't a superstitious man. What he saw, the man in buckskins, wasn't a product of his imagination. He was sure of that. Enjoying the warmth of his bath and the glow of the whiskey, he let his mind drift, remembering more of the affair that brought him into this part of Colorado territory. There was the incident with Charlie Bowers, a bushwhacker sent to kill him. Frank got the jump on him, sending Bowers on a 50-mile ride through a blizzard. If he got to Durango with his shot-up shoulder, Frank didn't know. Frank climbed out of the tub and toweled dry. It was time to stop living in the past and get on with the business of hunting down Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen. But as he put on clean denims and his last clean shirt,
he couldn't shake the image of the man he saw behind the cemetery.
There's no such thing as ghosts.
He wondered why the old man standing near the gate to the cemetery claimed he couldn't see the Indian walk back into the pine tree shadows. Frank pondered the possibility age was robbing the fellow of his senses. Even at night, this part of the Rockies was beautiful land to behold. Glenwood Springs lay just north of the Colorado River in a valley between towering mountain slopes. It was country Frank knew well. He walked through the quiet little town before he went to bed, thinking about Victor Van Bergen and Ned Pine. Now that his son was safely back in Durango, Frank knew the smartest thing he could do would be to forget about his quest for vengeance and go elsewhere. But it went against his grain. He strolled out to the overgrown cemetery with a cigar in his mouth, remembering the Indian he saw as he came into Glenwood Springs.
The ones who came before.
The man he saw was as real as the cigar between his teeth. He leaned against a rusting, wrought iron fence to look at the gravestones, feeling the chill of mountain air wash down from the slopes around him.
I knew you'd come back. Whoa, don't shoot me. I ain't armed.
A shadow moved in the pines west of the graveyard.
Who the hell are you?
We talked when you rode into town, mister. I was here when you said you saw one of the old ones.
Frank's gun hand relaxed.
What the hell are you doing out here this time of night, old-timer?
Visiting my daughter.
Your daughter?
She's buried here. Died from the consumption. Sometimes I come out here just so as I can be close to her. Makes me feel better.
The old man walked up to him.
Sorry about your daughter.
Well, it's been 2 years nearly. Can't sleep at night without thinking about her before I drop off.
A galloping consumption is a hard thing. It's a rough way to die.
She went fast. Less than 2 months after we found out she came down with it.
Frank understood the old man's grief. He lost a wife to a coward's bullet.
It's hard to lose a loved one, no matter what the cause.
The highest around in town after you got here, mister. They say you're Frank Morgan, the gunfighter. Old man Barnes at the hotel told me. And Smitty recognized you when you came to the hotel.
I don't make a living with a gun now. I gave all that up years ago.
But you was asking about Ned Pine and Vic Van Bergen. That don't sound like you come here with peaceable intentions, if you pardon me for saying so.
It seemed Frank's past would haunt him the rest of his life. He stared across the moonlit cemetery a moment.
They killed my wife and took my son hostage. I got my boy back, but I still owe them a debt. A blood debt. I aim to see they pay.
Then you are a killer.
Frank's jaw muscles went tight.
If I can find Van Bergen and Pine, I intend to kill them for what they did to my Vivian and to Conrad.
Could be. I can tell you where to find them.
Frank turned around abruptly.
Where?
The man aimed a thumb toward the snow-clad peaks north of Glenwood Springs.
Up yonder. Doc, that's Doc Holliday. He knows where they're at.
Would he tell me?
Can't say for sure, Mr. Morgan, but you can ask him for yourself if you've got a mind to.
Where is Holliday?
At the sanitarium.
Where's that?
Just ride down to the river and turn east. You'll see it as plain as day.
I'll do it first thing in the morning.
Now, Doc, he's cranky as hell. He's in a lot of pain, so they say.
All I want to know is where I can find Van Bergen and Pine.
Doc knows them. Leastways he knows where they go to hide out from the law.
I appreciate what you told me.
The old-timer turned toward town.
Well, that Ned Pine, he ain't no good. If there's a sumbitch in Colorado who deserves to die, it's him.
What's your name?
They call me George. I reckon that's all you need to know.
A moment later, George was out of sight around a bend in the road. Frank made up his mind to talk to Doc Holliday right after sunrise. As he was about to head back to the hotel, he saw a slight movement in the pine trees behind the burial ground. Again, he reached for his pistol. A shape appeared, a slender man dressed in buckskins. He walked with a swinging gait toward the rear of the cemetery, then stopped. Small hairs stood on the back of Frank's neck. He was looking at the same Indian he saw when he first came into Glenwood Springs.
Who are you?
No one answered. The Indian did not move.
I asked you a question.
Who the hell are you?
A soft voice spoke to him, though the Indian was more than 100 yards away beyond the cemetery fence.
Go to the mountains.
Frank wrapped his fingers around the butt of his Colt Peacemaker. An odd sensation touched some inner part of him, one he couldn't explain.
Walk around here so I can see your face.
Go to the mountains.
What for?
To find the men you seek. Ride to the...
Why should I take any advice from you? And how is it you know I'm looking for anybody? You won't even tell me who the hell you are.
I am the one who came before. We're called the Anasazi. This is all you need to know.
But how is it you know who I'm looking for?
Go to the mountains. One of the men you seek is behind you now.
The man wheeled away and disappeared into the forest.
Damn.
Frank gave some thought to following the Indian. Or was this all a product of his imagination? He glanced over his shoulder, just in time to see a man cradling a shotgun walking toward him from the direction of Glenwood Springs.
You Frank Morgan?
The man brought the shotgun to his shoulder. Frank wasted no time drawing his pistol, aiming it, drawing back the Colt's hammer.
I asked you a question, you son of a bitch.
Here's my answer.
The stranger with the shotgun stumbled, staggering to keep his footing. He fired a load of buckshot into the ground before he fell to his knees. Frank rushed forward, reaching the gunman just before he went over on his back.
Where's Van Bergen? Where's Pine?
Frank held his gun in his fist. The bearded cowboy lay motionless with blood leaking from a wound in his chest. His eyes were shut.
How the hell do you know I was here?
No answer escaped the man's cracked, forever sealed lips. Frank put his six-shooter away and headed back toward town. He would have to report the incident to the local sheriff and, if possible, get the dead man's identity. Somehow, Pine and Van Bergen knew he was here, hot on their trail. But what truly puzzled Frank was how the Indian knew a member of the gang was coming for him. Sheriff Tom Brewer looked down at the body in the light of a coal oil lantern.
Can't say as I've ever seen him in Glenwood Springs before.
He tried to kill me with that shotgun. I had no choice.
Brewer glanced up at Frank.
I heard you was in town, Mr. Morgan. I know your reputation. You're a killer for hire, a paid shootist. I won't tolerate that in my jurisdiction.
It was self-defense, Sheriff.
I reckon I'll have to take your word for it, unless there were any witnesses.
None. An old man who said his name was George was here before this gunslinger showed up. Only he left before the trouble started.
George Parsons. His daughter is buried here. I reckon that's all I need from you now, Mr. Morgan. Only I sure as hell hope there won't be no more shooting in my town.
There won't be, unless someone else starts it. The way this owl who did.
Sheriff Brewer turned back toward Glenwood Springs.
I'll send old man Harvey out to take care of the body. He's our undertaker, when he ain't being a blacksmith.
Frank turned out the lamp in his tiny room and lay across the bed. His guns were on a washstand beside him. All the recent bloodshed was thanks to Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen. He thought about Conrad and the snowstorm that finally led Frank to the right spot to rescue his son. Frank closed his eyes. Was his need for revenge so great it was worth riding this vengeance trail? He knew the answer as he drifted off to sleep. Wolf curled up beside the bed, watching him with big liquid eyes. Frank reined his bay east at the river. Wolf trotted beside the horse. After a big breakfast of pancakes, ham, with a pot of coffee at his elbow at Glenwood Springs' only cafe, he felt rested, better than he had in days. He purchased supplies at Coulter's General Store, enough provisions to last him for a month or more. He sighted a rock building and a faded, hand-painted sign that read,
Glenwood Springs Sanitarium.
It hung limply above a pair of weathered front doors.
The place seemed a resident of hard times, like the rest of the town. Frank swung over to a hitch rail and stepped down, wondering what Doc Holliday would be like. His waitress at the eatery said Holliday was dying with tuberculosis. Word was, he didn't have long. Frank let himself into the building, where a gray-haired woman in a rumpled nurse's uniform greeted him.
What can I do for you, mister?
I'd like to speak to Doc Holliday a moment.
He don't want any visitors.
It's important, ma'am. Someone's life may be in danger unless I can talk to him.
It was more or less the truth. If Holliday could tell him where to find Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen, their lives would damn sure be in grave danger when Frank caught up to them.
I'll ask him if he'll talk to you. Give me your name.
Frank Morgan. He may not recognize the name. Only please tell him I need to talk to him. I won't need but a minute of his time.
I heard that name before.
It's a common name.
Weren't nothing common about what I heard you done. I'll tell Doc you're here, Mr. Morgan. You can take a seat over there by those windows.
The nurse disappeared down a dark hallway. Somewhere in the back of the building, Frank could hear bubbling water and soft splashing sounds. No doubt the hot mineral baths this place was known for. A spring coming from deep in the earth and filled with healing, or so some folks said.
This place is damn near empty.
The woman returned a moment later. She halted in front of Frank and glanced down at his gun belt.
Doc says it's okay, but he asked if you was carrying a gun.
I'll leave it here on your desk.
He still had a belly gun hidden in his shirt, not that he figured he'd be needing it.
Come this way, Mr. Morgan.
She led him down the hallway.
Doc said you could only stay a minute or two. He's feeling real poorly now.
No, I understand, ma'am.
She opened a door into a small private room. A frail, emaciated young man lay on a narrow bed below the room's only window. The cover of a thin sheet and wool blanket kept out the morning chill. The woman closed the door behind Frank.
Doc Holliday?
The man on the bed might not weigh 100 pounds. His cheeks and eyes were so deeply sunken into his face, he could have been dead had he not spoken just then.
Yeah, that's me. You can take that chair in the corner. I've heard of you, Morgan. You have a reputation as a man with an intemperate disposition.
Frank grinned weakly.
I've heard much the same about you, Doc.
With a slender-fingered hand, Holliday wiped blood from his mouth with a blood-soaked rag.
Well, what brings you to me, Morgan? Nurse Miller said it was important.
Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen. I need to know where they are.
Oh, that's a nasty pair. Cowards, both of them. However, they'll shoot a man in the back and he'll be just as dead as if they'd faced him.
I know. Almost caught him a few weeks back in the south part of the territory. They were holding my son for ransom to get at me. I got my boy back. Put a bullet in Van Bergen's gut, but he survived. Pine got away clean.
Well, that's a damn shame. They need to take a dirt nap. What makes you so sure they here?
I picked up their trail. They still got a few gun slicks with them. One of them tried to jump me here in Glenwood Springs last night while I was down by the old cemetery. He came at me with a shotgun. Only makes sense it was one of Pine's or Van Bergen's shooters. Only thing troubling me is how they knew I was here. Not that it matters. I'm gonna kill them anyway if I get the chance.
You're not worried about the odds?
Never worry about the odds. I lost their trail south of here by a few miles. Figured they come here for whiskey and supplies.
Oh, yeah, they did. That was a couple of weeks ago.
Some old man in town told me to look for them up yonder in a place that doesn't show on the map I got with me.
Yeah, and it won't, but that's where you'll find them, most likely. There are remnants of an old mining town in a deep valley to the north. They hold up in a cabin on the west edge of the town. Nobody lives there now.
How do I find it?
Excuse me. There's a two-rut wagon road that angles northwest of town into the mountains. It's a steep climb. Ride 3 or 4 miles until you come to a little stream. Swing off that road. Follow the stream through the pines. It's a rough climb in places. I hope you're riding a good mountain horse.
I am.
Now the stream wanders for about 6 miles. You'll come to a place where it cuts between two ridges. You're going to want to ride up the more northern one. There won't be any trail to follow. Just ride slow and very carefully. When you come to the top, you'll be looking into a valley. There's an old Indian burial ground down below. You'll see the mounds. The mining town is to the east. What's left of it.
What about those old Indians, Doc? I thought I saw one yesterday near the Glenwood Spring Cemetery as I was riding into town.
Some people claim they seen them. I never seen one. I think it's poppycock. The Anasazi been gone for hundreds of years now.
I saw something. My dog growled when he saw it. The Indian wasn't my imagination.
Frank left out the part about the whispered voice he'd heard.
Well, maybe he was a Ute or Shoshone.
Holiday wiped his mouth again.
Though most of the tribes have been driven farther north by the army.
He was an Indian, whatever breed he was.
Right then, Frank couldn't shake the eerie feeling perhaps he did see a ghost. Though, as far as he knew, there wasn't a superstitious bone in his body. Holiday dismissed the subject with a wave of a pale hand.
Well, I never seen an Indian around here, and I've been here for 3 months. I only been bedridden the past month. As you can see, I'm at death's door. Doc Grimes tells me won't be long now.
Sorry to hear it, Doc.
Yeah, funny.
Holiday stared up at the ceiling.
I always thought a bullet in the back would take me to my grave. I plan to die with my boots on, as the old saying goes. This is one horrible way for a man to cash in his chips.
I'd rather go out quick myself.
Well, you may get your chance if Pine of Van Bergen sees you first. They won't do it honorably. You can bet your last damn dollar on that.
I'm well acquainted with them. I'll be ready when the time comes.
Well, now, you sound like a very confident fella, Morgan. Are you that good with a gun?
I get by. Tried to quit years ago, until this business with my son came about.
Well, good luck, Morgan. Now, if you'll pardon me, I need to close my eyes. I just took a dose of laudanum. I'm sleepy. You follow that stream until it passes between those ridges, right up to the crest of the valley. From there on, you just better have eyes in the back of your head.
I'm obliged, Doc.
I wish you the best.
Oh, my best days are already gone, Morgan.
Holiday's eyelids batted shut.
However, I must say I had a wonderful time while it lasted.
Frank started for the door.
One more thing, Morgan.
What's that, Doc?
Make sure nobody follows you out of town. Van Bergen and Pine have friends here, quite possibly. Backshooters, one to keep an eye out for you.
I killed one of them last night. Sheriff Tom Brewer made it real plain he didn't want me hanging around. Makes me wonder if he's a friend of Pine and Van Bergen.
I doubt if you have anything to fear from Brewer. But he could be looking the other way for a handful of silver when those outlaws ride into town. He won't be the first crooked lawman I ever met.
Me neither. Thanks for the warning, Doc. I aim to bring him down. Every last one.
Holiday didn't answer, his nostrils flaring gently with opium slumber. Frank let himself out and walked back up the hall to fetch his pistol. He saw the nurse seated behind her desk and came over for his gun.
Thank you, ma'am. Much obliged.
Is Doc asleep? I just gave him his laudanum before you arrived.
Yes, he's asleep.
Frank went outside and untied his bay, mounting after a look down the empty road back to town. He reined away from the sanitarium and heeled his horse to a jog trot. Remembering the directions Doc gave him, Frank knew he would have to pass through Glenwood Springs to reach the right wagon road, a ride that could attract attention should any of the gang be watching for him.
Let them see me. It'd be just as easy to kill a few more of them here rather than wait for an ambush somewhere in the mountains.
He rode through Glenwood Springs at the same slow trot, with an eye out for anyone who seemed to be watching him. He passed the sheriff's office and saw Tom Brewer step out on the boardwalk to stare at him with unfriendly eyes.
He's on the take.
Frank had seen the look in men's eyes before. Riding past a blacksmith shop, he noticed a new pine coffin on a pair of sawhorses.
One less back-shooting bastard to worry about.
Frank urged his horse to a short lope as he rode away from Glenwood Springs into a dense ponderosa forest. Less than a quarter mile from town, he found the two-rut wagon road Doc Holliday described. Frank reined his horse to a halt and looked behind him. No one was following him now, but it was too soon to be certain. He swung onto the wagon ruts and started up a steep hill. The pines grew so close to the road they were like walls on either side. Deep shadows lay before him. It was the perfect place for an ambush.
Out front, Wolf.
Wolf understood his job. He trotted out in front of Frank and the bay until he was more than 100 yards ahead.
Little insurance.
Frank pulled his Winchester from its saddle boot to jack a shell into the firing chamber. He lowered the hammer gently and rested the rifle across the pommel of his saddle. He slowed the bay to a walk and kept his eyes glued to the ruts and shadows. If Pine or Van Bergen meant to jump him on his way to the valley, they'd have their hands full. Wolf continued up the steep ascent without making a sound or giving a warning. Senses keen as ever, the old dog was rarely surprised.
Let the bastards come if they want. I got a little welcome for them.
Frank rode slowly between the pines, stopping every so often to check his back trail and to listen for the sound of another horse. Wolf sat in the middle of the road panting, watching the man and the horse behind him when Frank reined his animal to yet another stop.
It's too damn quiet.
But there was no evidence anyone was following him. Wolf sensed nothing ahead.
Getting jumpy in my old age.
Still, Frank felt he was being watched. He heeled his horse forward, continuing up the steady climb toward snow-capped peaks. The creak of saddle leather and the soft drum of the bay's hooves filled the silence around him for a time. Then Wolf halted suddenly, hair rigid along his backbone as he looked to the east. Frank drew rein on his horse at once, scanning the dark forest. A marksman worth his salt could kill him easily from those pines. Perhaps it was time to proceed with more care until he cleared this part of the road. He swung out of the saddle, using his bay for a shield, to continue moving northwest, walking beside the horse's shoulder. Still, Wolf didn't move, watching the trees.
That's good enough for me.
Frank moved off the road to enter black forest shadows where he would make a more difficult target. Balancing his Winchester in the palm of his hand, he crept along at a snail's pace.
What is it, Wolf?
Frank finally reached the spot in the road where his dog remained frozen between the ruts. Wolf wouldn't look at him, staring at the same spot on a wooded ridge, still growling. Now Frank was sure something or someone was out there. It would be a fool's move to continue along the road until he found out what it was. He ground-hitched the bay and started walking softly among the pine trunks, using them for cover wherever he could. Wolf trotted up beside him, his attention still fixed on the ridge. Wolf never gave him a false signal, despite the curves of his age. A the sound of a rifle's report from the ridge, Frank threw himself on the ground beside a ponderosa trunk, listening to the bullet sizzle high above his head.
Damn, that was close.
Frank gritted his teeth in anger. He knew now he should have been more cautious, coming around behind the ridge instead of approaching it head on.
I missed you, Morgan, but I ain't done yet!
Wolf was crouched beside him. It wasn't the first bullet the animal ever heard.
Stay, Wolf.
Frank crawled backward away from the tree, keeping it between him and the shooter. Frank took off in a crouch, dodging and darting from one pine to the next, his chest welling with rage. Moving as quickly as he could, he began a wide circling, taking him around to the back of the ridge. He saw a prone form using underbrush for cover at the top of the switchback, partially hidden in the shade to keep sunlight from gleaming off his rifle barrel.
Gotcha, you bastard.
Frank drew a bead on the man's back. He wouldn't shoot a man in the back without giving him a fair warning.
Hey, asshole! I'm back here!
The rifleman flipped over on his side, bringing his gun around as quickly as he could. It was just what Frank was waiting for. He triggered a .44 caliber slug into the man's belly.
Shit!
A crimson stain exploded on the shooter's shirt front. He dropped his rifle to grab his belly with both hands. Frank came to his feet, still covering the bushwhacker as he started toward him. Taking careful steps, he started up the back of the ridge.
Jesus, I'm shot!
Blood poured between the bushwhacker's fingers.
You got quite a gift for the obvious. You're gonna die for Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen. Was it worth whatever they were paying you to ambush me?
You ain't just gonna leave me here, Morgan.
That's exactly what I'm gonna do. I hope you die slow so you can think about what you just tried to do. Well, it hurts a bit, don't it?
Oh, you bastard!
I'm not a bastard. My Ma and Pa were married. You've been wrong about nearly everything so far, cowboy.
You gotta get me to a doctor.
I don't have to do a damn thing except climb on my horse and be on my way.
I can tell you where to find Ned and Vic. Only you gotta help me.
I already know where they are.
How the hell did you find out?
An Indian told me.
The gunman raised his head to stare at Frank.
You seen him too?
Frank merely nodded. The shooter's head fell back on the ground.
Help me, Morgan. I'll be dead before dark if you don't.
Seems a shame. I'm touched by your predicament. Not so different from mine. There I was on my peaceable way when some son of a bitch tried to shoot me from ambush. Of course, the slight difference is I got the drop on him and shot him instead. Now he wants me to have sympathy on him. Of course, I don't really need to tell you all this since you're the stupid son of a bitch who tried to kill me.
Damn, Morgan. My belly hurts. I'm dying.
Drew, I'm gonna find your horse and turn it loose while you leak blood all over these clean-smelling pine needles. I fully intend to leave you right here.
It was just business, Morgan. Ned hired me to take you out. You're a hired gun. You ought to know it damn sure ain't nothing personal. Oh.
I'm not taking it personally.
You gotta help me get to a doctor.
Nope, all I gotta do is keep riding toward that valley.
We should have killed that boy of yours when we had him. You cold-blooded son of a bitch.
I'm no son of a bitch. If you weren't already dying, I'd kill you for saying that. Hear that sound, back shooter? That's a death rattle in your chest. Won't be long now.
Help me.
Not today, dirtbag. I got business with your bosses. It won't wait.
Nobody can be that cold.
You're wrong again.
Son of a bitch.
Frank found a dun gelding in a ravine and pulled the saddle off it, tossing the saddle to the ground. Frank slipped off the bridle and gave the horse its freedom. As he was turning to climb back up the ridge, he thought he saw a shadow move in the forest higher above him. Frank raised his rifle and moved behind a pine tree.
I know I saw somebody.
But no matter how closely he looked, he saw nothing now, and it gave him a spooky feeling. Who the hell would be watching him unless he came here to shoot at him? He pondered the possibility the Indian who spoke to him at the Glenwood Springs Cemetery was watching him again. But he couldn't quite make himself believe in old Indian ghosts. It had to be a Ute or a Shoshone, a flesh-and-blood Indian. After a final examination of the woods, he strode back to the spot where the gunman lay. The bushwhacker's eyes were closed, and his breathing was shallow.
Adios, you yellow bastard.
He found his bay ground-hitched where he left him. Wolf sat patiently a few yards away in the tree shadows.
Out front, Wolf.
With Winchester in hand, Frank wondered if any more would try to kill him before he found the valley.